host. And in this interview, she says that when she was a teenager, she was abducted by extraterrestrials. How about that? That's pretty cool news, isn't it? And, of course, you know, the article that told about it made fun of the fact that, you know, maybe they gave her some kind of an implant that gives her that crazy-sounding laugh she's got. She does have a crazy-sounding laugh. Very attractive lady, though. And a very good actress, and she says that, yeah, she was abducted by extraterrestrials. So the next time you watch The Nanny, remember that. But, hey, I'm better. I'm back up to, I got asked earlier today, Jeff, how are you feeling? And my answer was, well, I'm much improved. I'm back up to dead. So, you ever feel that bad?
Yeah.
Yeah. I met Jeff in the Phoenix area. I met Jeff through his work as what people normally refer to as a sky watcher. He would watch the skies over Phoenix, and I was very interested in the skies over Phoenix because I had seen some weird stuff in the skies over Phoenix, Arizona. And so I became aware of Jeff's work by seeing him on the evening news. And began looking for him, trying to track him down. Finally, somehow I did. We got together, and we got Jeff on the show. And have become friends since then. And, in fact, have gone out and climbed around on South Mountain together and filmed a little mini-documentary out there. And kind of have spent some time out there. I think a couple of times we went to South Mountain. But Jeff is one of the really top-notch premier videographers of strange, weird stuff in the skies over Phoenix, Arizona. But there's something else Jeff is. Over the years, Jeff has become quite an expert in the ancient petroglyphs. And I'll show you some, those who are watching, I'll show you some petroglyphs from South Mountain in just a moment. But the petroglyphs are, some people call it rock art. They are images, pictures, that are chipped. They're just, it's like somebody took a little sharp-pointed something and just pecked a whole bunch of little pecks in a design and made a picture in these rocks. It's not a carving. It's not a statue. They just barely fleck off the surface of the rock, and it makes an image. And they're all over South Mountain, and he's become quite an expert in that. And these days, Jeff is also a television host. He's got his own television show in Tucson. Tell us about that, Jeff.
Oh, yeah. It's really fun having the show. You know, I guess I moved my studies a little bit further. I'm into TV now, which is kind of cool. I moved out of Phoenix. I was watching the mountains out there in Phoenix, Arizona for the longest time. And I hiked and did a lot of video out there, and I studied the petroglyphs for years. And I actually, you know, was sawing some of these things, and like the engravings on the rocks were actually in the sky on what I was filming. And I did a lot of tours down there. You mentioned that me and you hiked up there on the mountain. That was really fun. I can't wait to do that again.
I can.
And, yeah, that was great, Kevin. It was crazy to you and going up on the rocks.
It darn near killed me, but. But I'm an old guy, you know. You're just a young guy. So.
You did real good. And anyway, I had an opportunity to have my own TV show here in Tucson. The only catch was I had to move here, and I figured, well, you know what the hey, you know, let's go see what we can do up there. So I got settled up here and did the TV courses, and now I'm on the air. And since then, we've got a lot of emails, a lot of good people writing in, telling me their stories. And the next show I'll be presenting, we'll have some emails of some Skywatchers around the country with their their questions and their interpretations on the petroglyphs. So it's been really fun, and I'll probably be doing this for a little bit.
Well, I'll say this, and I mean this. I don't know of anybody that deserves that success more than you, because, ladies and gentlemen, this guy has gone through living hell just staying out there and continuing to do the work. Became the target of a couple of really jealous, petty people. And they decided they were going to destroy him. And today he's on TV, and you don't even know their names. And so it really...
That's nice to say. Thank you.
Well, congratulations. It really is truly deserved, and I'm very glad that you have your TV show now. You're pretty amazing, because when...
Thank you, Kevin. That means a lot coming from you.
Well, and I mean it, because, you know, I meet you, and we talk, and you're just Jeff, you know, and you're cool, and, you know, we just talk, and then we get out to South Mountain, and you become like a PhD, and lecturing about the petroglyphs and when they were made and what each of these petroglyphs is talking about, and... You know, and it's like a transformation just takes place.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's really fun. You know, it's really neat going out there on the mountains, and especially when you see something in the sky. You know it's something solid. You know it's something weird. You've never seen it before, and you get it on film. And the only problem is you don't have any other witnesses besides, you know, you and your camera. But then when you go hiking on the mountains and then you see the rock art, the petroglyphs out there, and you see the exact same thing on the rock that you saw in the sky days ago, well, it's just an overwhelming feeling that, hey, you know what? You're not crazy. There is something here. And you know what? They were here long ago in the past also. And these people who saw them, actually, you know, these petroglyphs, these rock art, are actually prehistoric photographs of what the Holocom Indians saw in the sky in their day. And, you know, I'm a big history buff, and I love the Indians, and I love their culture, and I love, the land and everything. And it's just, it's a great feeling to go out there and to discover these things. And to find out that, hey, you know what, you're onto something, there is something here, and it's been here a long way before we even came around, and it's kind of neat to start seeing them again.
Well, I mentioned earlier that I am going to show some pictures of these petroglyphs at South Mountain later in the show, and I want everybody to stay tuned, and hey, if you're not a member, take care of that right now, and then you can watch as well. But remember, when you join, if you want to watch the show, you're going to have to read that new member info right away, because that's going to tell you how to watch the live show, okay? Anyway, when you and I and one of our listeners from Australia, who had heard you on the show and wanted to come to Phoenix and meet me and meet you and go out on South Mountain, and so you agreed to that, and we went out, all three of us, and climbed around on South Mountain, saw some amazing stuff out there. But when we did that, you might remember there was one particular petroglyph that when we saw it, I said, I saw that in the sky. It was a barbell shape.
That's right.
Yeah, and I saw that in the sky above downtown Phoenix, and it must have been, I don't know, maybe 2005, 2006, somewhere along in there. About 2005, I guess. And it was just right up above the Civic Center there in Phoenix, very high, but it very definitely a barbell shape. And it was stationary when we had very strong wind. And then when it did leave, it flew against the wind toward South Mountain. And so we're out there climbing around on the rocks and everything, and I no way I could tell you where it is, but I know you know the mountain well enough to know where it is. We came up on this petroglyph of a barbell and people on the ground looking up at this barbell in the sky.
Isn't that neat? Isn't that neat to actually, you know, see what they were talking about, you know, and then mm-hmm. to go out there and see it on the rock? I mean, it's just it's a feeling that overwhelms you, you know. It's really neat.
Yes, it is. And I think, for those who are new to this information, you need to know that these petroglyphs are very ancient. And nobody knows exactly how old they are, but the you mentioned the Hohokam Indians, and actually Hohokam is an Indian word that means the people that were here, and they're gone.
Yes, it's the Pima. As a matter of fact, the Pima Indians consider themselves ancestors to the Hohokam, but in actuality, there's no hard evidence to suggest this. But the Pimas named them Hohokam, which means the people who went missing, the people who are gone. And I think it's fascinating that if this tribe, because the archaeologists, they want us to believe, well, the Indians, they left because it got too hot. All right, they migrated somewhere else. Okay, if they went somewhere else, where'd they go? And when you look into this, you know, you'll find out that, hey, they didn't go anywhere. They didn't end up anywhere. They actually, you know, it's when you and I move, we take our belongings with us. But yet the Hohokam Indians, they just up and left all their belongings there. And so they just seem to vanish.
Mm-hmm.
And when some of the interpretations say, some of the Native Americans say, when you look on my website, petroglyphsonthesky.com, you can find a whole bunch of documents there. And one of the theories, one of the tales is that the devil came from the east and took these people away. Now, when you look at the rock art, it actually shows some of these barbell beings, some of these serpent-type beings, picking these people up by their heads and taking them away somewhere. So, and that's something that the archaeologists, they don't want to agree to this. They don't want to admit this. But the evidence on the rocks, if we are supposed to take the rock arts literally, you know, the petroglyphs for what its true value meaning is, then it would suggest that these people got taken away by the Phoenix Lights. And that's something that, you know, no one really wants to talk about or really look into, you know, as far as, you know, us, you know, sky watchers and things like this. But trying to get, you know, an archaeologist to do this. You know what? I've talked to the archaeologist in Phoenix, and I've read his books, and it doesn't suggest one time that even the Mayans were here. Or how about Charles Holbrook? You know, he doesn't even mention Charles Holbrook. Now, he was the first park ranger on South Mountain in the city of Phoenix, and the Indians actually trusted him and told him where some of the gold tombs left by the Mayans are placed. And he was actually guarding those tombs. He guarded those tombs for 10 years until, you know, he retired and then passed on. But all that record was available. Everything when Holbrook was alive, back in the early 30s until the 1940s, that was the main story on South Mountain, that the Mayans were here, the Mexicans were here, and there's gold tombs up there. Matter of fact, when you study this, you'll find out at that time Charles Holbrook was still chasing people off the mountain for looking for the gold. And whenever he passed on, that information was buried. And I accidentally found this in a file at the City of Phoenix Library on the government department floor. I accidentally came across this file, and it just astonishes me because for over a year and a half, I was coming to the exact same conclusions, you know, with my observations and my studies on this. And in here was a whole paper on what Charles Holbrook did and how he protected all the tombs and all the petroglyphs and what he was there for. And it was all sitting right in front of my face. And I knew that I was onto something. So, you know, I photocopied all that stuff and I put it on my website. And the evidence is clearly there. You know what? They named a trail after him. It's called Holberg Trail.
Mm-hmm.
And also, they also dedicated one of his lookout towers way high up on South Mountain that's still there today. And it's called Holberg Tower. And that's where he used to stand to watch some of the people trying to come up and steal the gold. But after he passed on, there's no record of it. They just wiped him from history. He's gone. The stories are gone. And now we got these strange lights in the sky, and we have these strange markings on the mountains out there. Well, there's got to be a connection, and there is a connection, and I believe that the rock art not only holds our past, but our future as well.
Jeff, as we went away for break, you were talking about how, you know, a big chunk of the actual history out there at South Mountain has just been made to disappear. Now, when we were out there, you pointed out some places on South Mountain where the Army Corps of Engineers, and then also I think the some work program that was going on during the Depression, have dynamited some things and blown them up, and in one case actually put a concrete cap over something with their seal on it. What's that all about?
Well, back in the early 40s, there was a big depression, and President Roosevelt signed a work order called the CCC, Silver Oak Conservation Society, or council or whatnot. And actually, it was, you know, it's interesting. You know, the Holocom people, they didn't live to much older than maybe 25, 26 years old. They didn't live very long. And, you know, it was pretty much, you know, young adults that put the structures up on the mountain and carved all the rock arts. And then now, and back in the, you know, back in the 40s, early 40s, it was young men actually came in there and destroyed it. And I thought it was kind of a little bit depressing. But, the CCC, they were there, and they blew up a whole bunch of rock art. There was this one right off the central there, and a huge, huge panel, and it's all $60,000 worth of gold and silver off South Mountain. Some of the mines are still open to this day. Me and my son actually called into one. That was kind of fun. A little bit dangerous. I wouldn't recommend it, but it was fun. And they constructed a lot of trails up there, and they constructed a lot of chairs and to have a picnic and stuff, ramadas and things. And that was one of the goals of Charles Holberg. He really wanted the family. He wanted family kids, family people to come up on South Mountain and enjoy South Mountain the way it was supposed to be, and to have a little park there and everything else. And matter of fact, that park that he opened is still sitting there today, and not too many people use it, but it's still there. And so when you ask yourself, okay, you know, they're blowing up rock. I can understand they're looking for minerals and things like this. But why are they picking on the rocks with petroglyphs? You see the same rocks up there on one side, on their left-hand side, we have the same rock, same type of mineral, same type of granite. It's got a rock art on it. And that one's blown up. But the one on the right-hand side has the same rock, same mineral, but that one's left alone. You know?
And no petroglyphs on that side.
Right, yeah. It just makes me wonder, well, why are they destroying the rock art? Well, you know, studying this, when you get back further into the mountain where the CCC wasn't able to get to, you know, when you go further back, then the panels really come to life. They really start talking to you. And what I've learned is there's a lot of coyotes. There's a lot of coyote petroglyphs up there, a lot of deer petroglyphs up there. And what I noticed is when the coyotes, some of the coyotes and some of the deer is facing in a direction, and if you walk in that direction, give or take a couple blocks, even up to a mile, if you keep going in that same direction, you will find another rock with a big spiral, a bunch of barbels, a bunch of flying serpents, and that's what that coyote six blocks to a mile back was talking about. Sometimes they're actually facing right there. They're forever watching sacred places on the mountain. Now, one thing I've learned with the deer, now, the Indians, some of the Indians consider the deer sacred because of the antlers. Now, the antlers represents a sacred tree. Now, some of these legends say that these UFO, these beings like to come out of trees. Well, I filmed that. When you look on my website, petroglyphsonthesky.com, you can see a few of these creatures going, absorbing themselves into trees. And what I found out about these antlers is some of these antlers are actually road maps. They're maps to the side of the mountain on where to find some of the special hot spots on the mountain. So when we look at the antler, and it's going this direction and that direction and this direction, and then when you look behind that panel to the big mountainside, you'll actually come to find out, hey, that antler looks just like that trail 2 miles away over there, and that antler looks like that trail over there.
Uh-huh.
You see? And when you get up on there and you follow it and you walk up there and you see him, it's exactly what it's talking about. So a lot of the, now when you come inwards, when you get closer to the city, to the parking lots, you'll find a lot of deer, a lot of coyotes, and they're looking at certain spots, but those spots are blown up. Those parts are destroyed. Now, I found at least two tombs that are up there. One is on my website. One I haven't published yet. I kind of want to keep that secret for now. But one I have published, and what I found out is some of these deer, some of these coyotes are actually looking on places on where the gold is, because that was the legend, that whenever the stuff went down, whatever happened to these people, there were people that survived this Holocaust, and they hid in the mountains, okay? And when it was all over, they vowed never to come back to the Valley of the Sun, because they knew it was cursed. And if they were going to live there, then they would have to eventually go back to war with the spirits of the earth and sky. So they all knew that this land was cursed. So they vowed never to come back to the Valley of the Sun again. But they left their gold there. They buried all their gold, and they took off back to Mexico. And they never came back. They never came back. Matter of fact, Valley of the Sun sat desert in dormant for 400 years until actually the Indians started coming back. And then some of those Indians, they would live on the outskirts of Phoenix, the outskirts of the valley. They knew that the spirits, that land was cursed, you know, so they lived on the outskirts. They didn't go into it, you know, and until later on when the Pilgrims and the Cowboys came in there and they saw all the farm and all the canals. You know, the Holcomb were master canal builders at that time, and they were the best. They were the best canal system in the world at that time. And then when the Cowboys showed up, they, you know, said, hey, this is perfect farming ground. You know, maybe we can, you know, do some mining and this and that. And this is pretty much how Phoenix was born. It actually
started in the town
of Mesa. Phoenix started in Mesa, and it actually expanded outwards. And then now, you know, no one's really talking about, you know, the rock art or what's up there, is because the government has done their real hardest to cover up this story. And I believe if it wasn't for me, then it would still be buried.
Yeah, as a matter of fact, folks, these Hohokam, which simply means the people who vanished, they built a series that, look, if you've ever been to Phoenix, you should know exactly what I'm talking about. It's Mars with cactus on it. Phoenix is absolutely desert. And it is, and for my taste, it's like living in the northern suburbs of hell. I absolutely didn't. I like the people in Phoenix. I absolutely hated the weather. And I mean, you know, when it gets so hot, they close the airport because the runway is melting. That's a little bit too warm, you know. But let me say this: the Hohokam did not leave because it was too hot, because they built naturally air-conditioned houses.
Oh, Kevin, you remember when we were up there and we saw all the dried-up riverbeds and, mm-hmm. and waterfalls?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it was like it was tropical out there. I mean, there was plenty of water out there in the desert at that time.
Well, and of course, even today, you have the Gila River, which is a dry riverbed most of the time.
Yes.
But it's still marked on the map as a river, but it's just sand most of the time. But they built houses that were recessed down into the ground and had a constant temperature year-round of about 75 to 80 degrees. So they were comfortable inside of those. They also built all these canals. And today, folks, Phoenix, Arizona is using 161 miles of Hohokam canals for their water supply. How about that? 161 miles of Hohokam canals are part of the Phoenix water system today.
That's right. They reuse the canals. Yep.
Mm-hmm. Now, I want to share a picture or two with our audience, and you're not watching the show tonight because you're sitting there talking to me. But I'll describe it, and you will recognize, because these are things that you and I have seen, and you've seen so many times. And we're looking at a rock panel. It's just a big rock that's a flat face, and on this are carvings, and we can see what looks like a deer, a couple of deer, and then we see a spiral and some circles and some other things on that rock panel. Now, in the next picture that I'm going to show, folks, I've marked some of those things, okay? Now you can see I've marked something as a spiral. I've marked something as an egg shape. There is a boomerang shape or a crescent shape. And there is something I've labeled as a notched disc. Now, in the next picture I'm going to show you, I've highlighted those shapes so you can see them and see them a lot easier. You told me that a spiral, Jeff, that a spiral that ends pointed upward indicates there is a doorway or portal from the sky to Earth. It's a portal in the sky. Out of this spiral, we see an egg-shaped thing coming out of there, a small egg-shaped thing. We see a crescent thing coming out of there. And we see, coming out of that spiral, we see this notched back disc. And it has sections in it. These discs that have a notch in the back of them, people are very familiar with seeing these in NASA video. Remember, ladies and gentlemen, the tether experiment. Remember those notched back things out there, huge things flying around all around that tether. These have also been photographed flying in Earth's atmosphere. Well, here we've got a spiral indicating a portal in the sky, and out of it is coming a boomerang, or you might say a crescent, an egg-shaped thing, and a notched-back disc. And this is why when Jeff tells me, and as he told you just a few minutes ago, that these petroglyphs really are prehistoric photographs. And people didn't have cameras and film. These are the recording of what they saw. They were seeing the things that you and I call UFOs. All right, my guest this evening, Jeff Woolline, and we're talking about his work with petroglyphs and things, anomalous things in the sky that actually you look up there and you find those same shapes on those petroglyphs. As we went away for break, Jeff, I was saying that I was highlighting what you said about the petroglyphs being ancient, prehistoric photographs, really, where they recorded what they had seen. But whenever you go and read any of the official books on these petroglyphs, they make them all some kind of religious rite, some kind of religious meaning, you know. Or they are just doodling about some hunt they went on. But, you know, when you see the doodling, that's what it looks like. And when you see a hunt, that's what it looks like. And then when you see UFOs, that's what they look like. And nobody talks about them. Nobody talks about these UFOs, these things in the sky. But, you know, you've actually, you've been in some other television shows where when you were out there filming, you actually, the cameraman caught some of these things, right?
Oh, yeah. Ultimate Encounters went out there, and I did a little tour for them. And I was telling them, hey, you know what? You know, it's getting close to about, you know, 5 o'clock. You know, that's usually the time that I see them. You know, if we go over here to this little hill down the road here, you know, I like to sit there and watch and see if anything happens. You want to go see if you want to check it out? And he's like, oh, yeah, sure, you know, why not? So we went up there, and within about a half an hour, there was an orb just was right over our heads there for the longest time. And I was hoping he was going to put it in the show, but he didn't. And we filmed it, and he was boggled. He didn't know what it was. And when he was taking me home on the freeway, he was like, wow. He's like, I actually saw something, man. He's like, I've never seen a UFO ever before. And he's like, wow. He's like, I met you. We went up on the mountain, and wow, I saw something. You know, he was really amazed. But it was sad that they didn't put it on the air. Not only that, but when I did tours on the mountain, there's at least, you know, 6-7 pages on my front page of petroglyphsinthesky.com where actually, you know, hikers, the tours actually see orbs in the sky while we're there. So it's pretty neat.
Well, yeah. But, you know, it isn't just orbs. I mean, there's orbs. That's true. But I have seen things over Phoenix that look like, I saw one that looked like a black snake. And,
yeah.
You know,
yeah.
It looked like a snake. That's what it looked like. And it was up there for a long time, and it did not hold its configuration. You know, it did move, it like a snake moves. And then it just sort of crawled off through the sky. Back towards South Mountain. I've seen that. It's a weird place. It's a very weird place.
Yes, you know, not only what we've seen, you know, as far as flying serpents here in the Valley of the Sun, but also Mexico. Boy, when you look at the Mexico sightings, you know, their serpents are huge. You know, and you can actually understand, you know, why the pyramid out there, you know, has the serpents on it. You know, because it's actually representing that type of god.
Did the Hohokam look at these sky creatures as gods?
Well, you know, that's hard to say. You know, they didn't worship the sun, you know, as a god, but they felt he was a tyrant. So I mean, they did, you know, I guess they did, you know, in a way worship them. I mean, they would have ceremonies, you know, on the equinox and the solstice, you know, so clearly the sun had played a huge role in the part. But when you actually, you know, when you go out there and you look at the rock art, and you see the light and shadows. Now, this is interesting. In my two and a half years of studying South Mountain and watching the sun, seeing how it goes through the sky, you know, the Hohokam, they were great sky watchers, you know, and they always, you know, kept tabs on the sun, the moon, the stars, Venus, things like that. And when you actually study the rock art, you'll find on the winter solstice and on the equinoxes, there's light and shadow effects. And the sun hits these type of rocks to perform a shadow to go through a spiral.
Mm-hmm.
Now, these spirals represent doorways. And as you said, when a spiral ends up, it acts like a doorway for the sky. And when a spiral ends down, it acts like a doorway on the ground. There's counterclockwise for coming out, and then clockwise for going in. And when you see the light and shadow effect, and then you wait, you know, for a little while, at least a week or so, then you'll start to understand what these shadow markers are actually representing, what it's all about. It's actually telling you, because they'll have the shadow, but they'll have other little weird markings there, like barbells or orbs. Or, men that look like, you know, like shaman. And it's actually telling you when to start looking for these things in the sky and what to look for. So my conclusion is the first year that I sat there and I watched the mountain for a whole year, I noticed that some UFOs were really active during some months, and in some months they were gone totally. And it coexists between the solstice and the equinox. And I come to find out that when that equinox or solstice is around, you won't see anything. They're gone. They're gone for at least a week or so. But then as it starts to get in between the solstice and or the equinox and the solstice, that's when those things are really here. I mean, you first start to see them in that first couple weeks, little dots, little white dots way up in the sky. When you're right in the middle of the action, they're right up next to your face. They get really close. When it gets starting to get closer to the equinox, they start to go away. And it repeats itself. It's been a repeating cycle for thousands of years. This has been going on. And when I actually realized this, you know, I actually was able to predict them, and they seem to come on certain times. When you look at my on my sightings, you'll notice, you know, a whole bunch of sightings in the morning, you know, a little bit of sightings in the afternoon, and a whole bunch of sightings late around dinner time. And that was the pattern. That was the pattern with these things. And the first year, it was okay. They were here this month. They were gone that month. They were here this month. They were gone that month. And then the next year, they came back on the exact same months, but increased. It increased in size. Now, what I believe is going on right now is a little mini UFO invasion that no one's really aware of, that it's only a matter of time when these things are going to do another big spread in the sky and let people know that, yes, they're here, and we just got to find out, you know, what the agenda is next.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, it used to amaze me in Phoenix when I was there that I would talk about having seen something in the sky, and my neighbors that I would be talking with would say, I've lived here all my life, I've never seen anything. And you know, I used to ask, and so how often do you look up? And they would do this little nervous giggle and say, well, probably not too much. You know, you can't see what's up there unless you're looking up there. And there's a lot of activity up there. Lots of it. Now, it's not like the skies are just covered, just blanketed with UFOs over Phoenix. That's not what we're talking about. But it is frequent, very frequent. And especially when you get out around South Mountain, and as those of you who don't know about Phoenix, as you can probably guess, South Mountain is called South Mountain because it's south of Phoenix. But when you get out around South Mountain, there's a lot of activity. And you're very, very close to the city at that point. In fact, the suburbs come right up to the mountain. And, I mean, literally, I used to have a backyard that, you know, you look over the fence and you're looking up on the mountain. And,
yeah,
it comes right up to the mountain. But the city itself, the city of Phoenix, is very, very close to South Mountain.
Yeah, you know, it's weird. These UFOs, you know, it's interesting. You say, well, I lived out there and I haven't seen anything. Well, for one, you know, you got to pay attention. You got to look up, you know, because these things aren't, it's not Hollywood, okay? It's not a TV show, all right? This is real, and they don't make noise. Okay, so you're not going to, you know, hear them. Nothing's going to draw your attention unless you pay attention and you look up. And that's another thing, you know, that I've learned, that everyone's waiting for, oh, I heard this big spaceship. Woo! You know, oh, my God, come on.
My guest is Jeff Woolline. Jeff has been with us many times before, but it's been a long time. And since he was with us last time, he has moved from the Phoenix area to Tucson, Arizona. And he is a host of a television show there dealing with these petroglyphs in the sky. And Jeff, by the way, what do you call your show?
I call it Petroglyphs in the Sky Ultimate UFO Show.
Well, that's a good title. Good title.
Thanks. You know, I named my website, you know, Petroglyphs in the Sky, because, you know, I wanted something to signify, you know, what I was doing, you know, what I was all about, what the website was going to be all about. And you know, hey, you know, the petroglyphs are being seen in the sky now. You know, you are photographing, you know, flying, you know, petroglyphs that are on the rocks, you know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
So you know, I just came up with Petroglyphs in the Sky and seen the work, and I've been holding on to it for about 5 years now.
Well, it's very apropos because I know, because I have been there, I have seen these petroglyphs, and I have seen those very things that are carved in the petroglyphs. I've seen them in the skies over Phoenix. And after we, Jeff, every time you and I do a show, I say something like that during the show. And every single time I get email from people who are highly, highly skeptical about that. And all I can tell you, folks, is I don't ask you to believe me. I don't care if you believe me. I'm telling you what I've seen. And if you really have some kind of strong doubt about it, save up your money, go to Phoenix, go to South Mountain, and look at the petroglyphs, and then stay for several days. Watch the skies, and you'll see some of those petroglyphs in the skies over Phoenix.
Yeah, you know, one thing that I didn't have when I was doing all this research, you know, this is, you know, how I came to conclude all this, you know, and is I actually sat by the mountain for 2.5 years. I moved close to the mountain, and I never stopped watching it. I was always there. You know, if I was awake, I was sitting in the kitchen with my camera ready, and if anything was going to get by me, you know, it was going to be while I was asleep. And, you know, I get all kinds of critics, you know, and I get people, hey, I went up on the mountain, and I didn't see anything. You know, and it's like, well, hey, you know, what time did you go? What month was it? You know, where was the solstice at? Did you go during an equinox? You know, I mean, this is one thing that I didn't have that people have, you know, now. They have my research to go on. And for 5 years, you know, I've been beat up by the critics, but I have not once had one person call my bluff. Go out there, watch the damn mountain for a year, okay? I did it for 2 years, all right? I'll give you a year. Go out there, watch that mountain, hike the petroglyphs, dedicate your time to this, and then come back and talk to me after a year. And if you still haven't seen anything, then we've got something to talk about. But until then, we don't have anything to talk about because you were not there. You have to go out there and experience this stuff for yourself. And then in most cases, you know, some of these critics, oh, they see a light and you're with them. Oh, that's just a flare, Jeff. Oh, that's a balloon, Jeff. No, okay? Even when the proof is right there in front of their face, they still don't want to believe it. So some people, you know, you can't convince. The only person you really need to convince is yourself. And in order to do that, you need to do the research. You need to get out there and actually watch and pay attention. Because you know what? You're not the only one doing it. There's other people out there doing it too. You'll actually come to find out that there's little black helicopters and little white airplanes that like to hang around that mountain. And when that mountain becomes active, so do those airplanes and those black helicopters.
Yeah, you filmed some of those too.
That's right. Mm-hmm. That's right. They are actually watching what's going on out there. They're monitoring. You know, I don't know how credible this is, but I did have a story. Someone told me this, that when the Phoenix Lights happened, that President, well, who was president back then? I think it was Monica Lewinsky. What's his name?
President Lewinsky?
Yeah,
Bill Clinton.
What is it?
Yeah, Bill Clinton.
That was the person that got in trouble, that president, with Monica. Who is it? Clinton. There you go, Clinton. It was Clinton, you know, got word of that. And him and all of his advisors decided to go underground for a couple hours as the event was taking place, and then they didn't come up. Now, I don't know if that's credible or not, but I believe it. You know, I believe that the government is watching what's going on. I believe they know what's to come, and they're not going to tell the public this. Hell, they already have their bunkers. They're all ready to go. It's us people. It's the people above here, you know, that really need to pay attention to the skies, because even the Bible says, hey, when you get close to the end of days, look up. Look up, because I'm coming in the cloud. And what are we seeing in the skies? We are seeing these things in the clouds today. And I believe that's what the government is looking forward to or is looking at. And they're ready for these things to come and make contact. And unfortunately, when they do, I don't think it's a very good thing. You know, I got a lot of people asking me questions, well, how come they haven't made contact? Hell, they've been here since 1997 when everyone's starting to see them. And I'm thinking, and I actually tell them, look, you know, at that time when the Holocom people were here and they were dealing with them, they kind of needed these things, all right? Apparently, the stories say that these things taught the Indians how to live. They taught them how to plant. They taught them how to weave baskets. They taught them how to plow. So they needed those things. And as it sits today, we don't need those things right now. Mm-hmm. You know, if one came down and says, hey, worship me, you know, I'm a god. Oh, okay, well, that's all fine and dandy, but I have to go to work right now. I have to go to school right now. Okay, I really don't need you right now. I have other things to do. But if there was something that happened to the earth, like a war, or if the earth tilts, you know, or there's no food, there's no water, but yet they see these things in the sky, and one comes down and says, hey, you know, I'm the creator. Worship me. Look what I can do. I can clear up this whole world for you, but you need to bow down to me. And if you don't, then you're dead. I'm going to cut off your head. Okay? And that's one of the reasons why I think that they haven't made contact yet, is because we don't need them yet. But if we need them, that's when we're in trouble.
Now, and let me say, what you've just described, folks, go look at the petroglyphs, and you see the same scenes that depict what he's just described. And it's pretty amazing. It really is amazing. Jeff, I'm going to open up the telephone lines, and if anyone in the audience has a question or comment and would like to address that to Jeff, you can call us on the telephone. It is
623-444-5889.
623-444-5889.
Can I bring one more thing up?
Well, let me finish this. Okay, hang on.
Okay, sorry.
If you're not in the USA and you're not in Canada, we understand it can be expensive to make an international long-distance call, although that number will work from anywhere in the world. But if you're out of the USA and outside of Canada, then you can use our flash message option on the website. Just go over to Kevin's... Scroll down, you'll see the picture about tonight's show, and right above it is the link that says flash message. All right, Jeff, go ahead and call her. Hang on, we'll get to you in just a second.
I'm sorry, I missed that. What was that?
Go ahead. We have a caller on hold, but go ahead.
You know, as the show, as we've been talking, you know, I don't know if the listeners have caught on to things yet, you know, but I did say, you know, that these people were carried away, okay? They were taken away. They were taken up into the sky, okay? And, you know, when we read the Bible, you know, there's not one evidence, or there's not one word that says rapture in there. But what it does say on the First Thessalonians, it says that all the people left behind will be caught up into the clouds to meet the Lord for judgment. Okay, now this has been going on for like thousands of years. This has been read. And I think one thing that has been overlooked is it says, will be caught. Okay? Will be caught. Will be caught up and taken up into the sky. Well, what's to say that all these orbs, that all these flying serpents, okay, I can picture this, all right? When the time has come, these things are going to come down, and they're going to catch people, and they're going to take them up into the sky, okay? Now, what I'm thinking is what happened to the Holocom was like a type of rapture, all right? They were taken up into the sky. They were carried away. And what does the Revelations tell us? The Revelations tell us the exact same thing that happened to the Holocom.
Okay, let's go to the telephone. Caller, you're live on the Kevin Smith Show. Your first name and from where are you calling?
Kevin, this is Brent from Wyoming.
Hello, Brent.
Hi, Kevin. Jeff, long time no hear.
Yes, hi. Glad to hear from you.
I asked this question the last time you were on.
Okay.
Have you ever gotten a flute or some kind of musical instrument and tried to bring them in, if you will?
Oh, absolutely, yes. They like music. When we look at the petroglyph, and his name is Coco Pelli, he's got a flute in his hand, and he's not up into the sky. He's playing the flute down towards the ground, all right, to the doors and to the underworld. Okay, and I do believe that certain sounds do attract these things. I used to go up there all the time, and I know one native song. I go up there and I sing to him. You know, Kyoto, hey na 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 ho, hey na 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 ho. And as soon as I got home, give or take a couple hours, boom, one would come over to the house. So yes, I do believe that, you know, music, you know, does seem to attract these things, like vibrations.
Okay, another question for you. I know you're in Tucson. It's a couple hour drive to Phoenix. But have you ever taken some kind of, there's something called Carillion photography. Have you ever taken pictures of those petroglyphs, especially the spirals, with that kind of camera? Or have you, is that a possibility sometime in the future?
Well, I don't have that type of technology. I wish I did, but you know, if I had that type of camera, sure, I'd love to, you know, to check it out.
I think that'd be interesting research. See what kind of energies you can find.
Yeah, that's okay. Right. You know, I think if we took like a Geiger counter up there, I think when these things, when it starts to happen, you know, I think it starts to, you know, some type of radiation. You know, the only reason why I say this is because I had a black helicopter come over, and he was really hanging over this spot. I mean, he was there for like almost a half an hour, and as soon as he left, boom, a UFO left from that exact spot. Now I'm thinking, well, if I had, you know, infrared or something to monitor this, you know, something to actually see, maybe you can actually see, you know, the radiation, you know, start to gather right there, you know, see the energy. You know, and I think that, you know, some of these cameras nowadays can actually pick up that energy.
Yeah.
It'd be neat to see.
That would be an interesting project for you. Okay. I'll see.
Yes, it would be.
All right, Brent, thanks for the call. 623-444-5889. And you need to write that down because I don't know that I will be giving the telephone number out anymore. I might if I slip up. But 623-444-5889. Jeff, you're no longer in the Phoenix area. And most, if not, well, not all, but most of your work, your research, was done right there in the Phoenix area, and it pertains to what's going on in the Phoenix area. But, you know, these petroglyphs appear not only in Phoenix, they appear all over Arizona, and in fact, they appear all over the world.
Yeah, uh-huh. You're absolutely right, Kevin. You know, in some cases, it's kind of eerie. Excuse me. Because sometimes it even looks like the same artist. You know, you can tell in different types of art and things like this. And when you have one clear on the other side of the world, it looks exactly like, you know, what you're seeing over here, and it looks exactly like the same artist, you know, same chipping, you know, same engraving, you can tell. You know, it's just creepy. And, you know, what I found out, it seems like it's the same story all over the world. It's mm-hmm. just told just a little different, mm-hmm. you know. But it all basically boils down to these creatures in the sky. And I believe that they have always been here. You know, the NASA's looking for life on other planets, and some of these, you know, ufologists are expecting some life on another planet to reach us. But actually, you know, they're in our backyard.
Yeah, they really are. They're here.
Here the whole time. You know, SETI's out there listening. They're starting to do lights now, shooting lasers up there, trying to contact. I think we need to sit in front of the mountain. I think if you want to find a UFO, if you want to find another, you know, creature, another species of life that you haven't seen yet, sit in front of the mountain for a few years, man. You'll see it.
To the telephone and caller, you're live on the Kevin Smith Show. Your first name and from where are you calling?
Hi, this is Rex from Miami.
Hi, Rex.
Hey, I was wondering, when you first got started with the petroglyphs, how did you learn what they mean, especially the more abstract ones? How did you figure that out?
Well, you know, I really didn't know. When I first got into this, I really didn't know about the petroglyphs on South Mountain until I saw a TV program in Phoenix, and it was Dave Morris. He's he works from the Pueblo Indian Art Museum, the big famous one in Phoenix, and I saw him on television doing tours. And he was telling the people there, well, you know, because the guy asked him, well, it looks like this stick figure man is looking at something in the sky. And Dave said, well, yeah, that's some of the interpretations here, is our ancestors saw these things in the sky. Well, that just set off a bell with me, you know, hey, we got strange lights in the sky, we got strange markings on the rock. You know, let's call up this Dave guy and see if he can do a tour with me. You know, at that time, I was watching the lights, I did a lot of news reports at the time. And when I met him, I didn't tell him what I was, what I was doing or anything. I just said, hey, you know, can you teach me the petroglyphs and the legends and just all the crazy stuff that you know, I want to know. You know, so we spent a couple hours up on the mountain there. And he taught me about the lizard people and the spirals he's actually telling me, hey, you know this little serpent thing right here, and these people are carrying, that's not a cane, that's actually one of our, that's a spirit, you know. And at that time, I'm still thinking spaceships, technology, nuts and bolts. And he's telling me, well, you know what, some of these cracks and crevices where these spirals are at, they're actually doorways for the spirits. So I'm thinking to myself, well, how is a spacecraft going to get in that little crack? Until a few months later, I actually saw one of those beings absorb himself into a crack. I watched him go straight into that rock. And I'm like, oh, my God, that's what he's talking about. This isn't no nuts and bolts. This is another life form, you know. And when you start looking at some of the, once you see the things in the sky, then all the abstract drawings come in. I mean, you can read it like an open book. It is so clear, you know, because you can say, hey, I've seen that. I know what he's talking about. You know, or either this, or hey, I haven't seen this one yet, but I'm pretty sure I know what it's talking about. You know what I mean?
Yeah, okay. Yeah, that makes sense.
And yeah, you know, Rex, let me...
5 years of research and a lot of studying on the glyphs, but mostly, you know, I learned from the sky. The sky taught me. The sky taught me on these petroglyphs, you know, what to look for, you know, when it's going to be here. Watch the sun. You know, it's easy. A five-year-old could do it.
Well, let me say this too, Rex. When I first walked out there and saw these petroglyphs, first time I was out there and saw it, I was with Jeff. And before he started talking and explaining it, I was looking at it thinking, man, that's confusing. I mean, that's just confusing. So he starts explaining it. Well, okay, he explained it. Some months later, I sat down with a Native American shaman and drew some of these petroglyphs that I had seen, and I said, now, I was told this means this, and this means that. And the shaman said, that's correct. That's what that means. So it confirmed for me that Jeff has it right.
Oh, and wasn't that interesting?
I'm sorry, Rex?
Go ahead.
Oh, okay, so they're kind of, they may be more universal symbols then.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and in fact, they're all over the world. These spirals, you can find them in the Middle East. You can find them in Egypt. You can find them in Australia. They're all over America. You find them in South America. The same symbols show up all over the world.
That's right, and pretty much the same meaning. And what, you know, you said yourself, you know, when we're out there on that panel and you saw that barbell, you made that connection. Hey, I saw that thing in the sky.
Yeah.
You know, that's basically what I did. I have, you know, at least 500 sightings under my belt, you know, a lot of them I filmed, and that's how I can actually look at a petroglyph and pretty much understand what it's talking about because I've seen it. I've seen it.
Yeah. No, it's interesting. Yeah, thanks.
Rex, have you ever been to Phoenix?
Yeah, actually, I went to Arizona State for my freshman year in the 80s.
Well, you know exactly what I mean then about the weather.
Yeah, that was a pretty hot city.
Yeah, it's miserably hot. It really is. Okay, Rex, thanks for the call.
Okay.
All right. 623-444-5889. You know something? We also had a Native American shaman on the air one night, and we were talking about petroglyphs, and I mentioned what you said about these spirals. If they end up, it's into the sky, and it's a portal in the sky, and if they end with the spiral going down, that is a portal into the earth. And she said, yes, but there is something else about that. And I said, what's that? She said, the portal going into the sky is male, and the one going into the earth is female.
Now that I haven't heard of. Yeah. I haven't heard that yet, so I'll have to look into that. And did she evaluate a little bit?
Yeah, you know, I honestly can't remember everything she said about that. That just kind of stuck in my mind, you know, that there was... that they're writing... What stuck in my mind, you know, I speak several languages. And we don't do this so much in English, but in all other languages, just about all other languages, each word, each noun is either masculine, feminine, or neuter. And it stuck in my mind that their language followed that pattern. Their petroglyphic language followed that same pattern, that you had masculine and feminine in their writing. And again, we don't do that so much in English, but certainly it is true in, for instance, Spanish. Mesa. And Jeff, I had heard, of course, I had heard about the Phoenix Lights. The whole world heard about that. But I had heard about that before I moved to Phoenix. I moved to Phoenix the first time in 2001, and then I was overseas for 2 years, and then came back. And came back to Phoenix in at the end of 2003. So I was not there when the Phoenix Lights happened, but I had heard about it. And so, you know, I was, you know, pretty much, of course, I was already doing this show. I started this show in 2000. And I was watching the skies a lot, paying attention to the skies a lot. But I have to tell you, I was surprised. I really was surprised when I started noticing weird stuff in the sky. Now, one follow on to what I was saying about the shaman saying on the air here that if a spiral is pointed upward, that's a portal in the sky, and it's masculine. And if it's pointed down, it's a portal in the earth, and it's feminine. The reason that stuck in my mind is because it's just yet another evidence that these people were sophisticated. That's sophisticated language. That's not just saying ugh. That's sophisticated language and sophisticated writing. And we already know they had the most sophisticated canal system in the world at that time, and the city of Phoenix is living on that canal system today. So these are not people who are backward. Perhaps they did not have all the gadgets. Well, probably we can say for sure they didn't have all the gadgetry that we have. But they're not backward people. They're very, very smart, very intelligent people. And then they just vanished. Well, the Anasazi is another group thought, actually, some people think the Hohokam are the same as the Anasazi, and the Anasazi the same as the Hohokam, because there are some similarities in their building. But Anasazi is simply another Indian language, and it's a word that means the people who vanished, just like Hohokam. So what do you think? Are they Anasazi?
The Hohokam?
Yeah.
Yeah, you know, I'm starting to think that it's very possible. Yeah, the Anasazis were the Hohokam. You know, they disappeared about the, you know, the same way. And I'm coming to the conclusion. Yeah, that could be, you know, because they talk about the lizard man, you know, and the Hohokam talk about the lizard man. You know, how they came up out of the sand world, you know, to lose their tail, to look like everyone else. And then when they went back down into the sand world, they regrew their tail and promised to return someday. You know, some of that rock art out there that we see, actually, you know, there's like this one piece, there's like a corner piece, all right, of rock, okay? And the whole complex spiral on one side and a spiral on the other side. And when you look at it just right, it looks like a lizard coming out of the rock. So, yes, I believe the Anasazi and the Hohokam, you know, were either interacting together or was the same type of tribe.
They're very closely related, apparently.
That's right.
Another thing that's pretty interesting is that you have said that the Mayan were coming up and trading with the Hohokam. Is it possible that the Hohokam actually were Mayan?
That's possible too. Yes. Some of the stories say that the Hohokam was already there when the Mayans showed up, you know, and they were bringing, you know, offers for trade. You know, the Hohokam wasn't a violent race. You know, you won't see any petroglyphs with the Hohokam with a war with anyone except for these sky beings. You know, we see a lot of arrows pointed up, you know, shooting at flying serpents. Okay, we find a lot of that, but we don't find a lot of war. You know, but what we do find is that the Mayans were there, and they helped out a lot with the petroglyphs out there, and some of the pottery. You know, the pottery shards we find out there is not the same dirt from Phoenix. You know, some of it was carried from Mexico, some from California. You know, South Mountain was a major place. I mean, apparently a lot of people, not only the people that were worshiping this mountain, but a lot of people from the different parts of the United States was coming to this mountain. This mountain used to be called Mount Sapoa, Mountain of Mercy, okay? And there was a lot of sacrifice going on at that mountain, a lot of trading. It was an active mountain until, you know, it all vanished and it all disappeared.
You know Walter Bosley, right?
Yes.
Walter Bosley and I went out there and climbed around on South Mountain and shot another mini documentary out there. And we found a place where we were, you know, they have these signs that say don't go beyond this sign and you don't get off the trail. Well, if you walked around the rock face to the other side, you would have found a sign that said don't get on the rocks, but approaching it from the side that we approached it from, we didn't see that sign. And so we climbed and we went way up, and So we're up at the top looking, and that's the weird thing, is these petroglyphs will be in the most inaccessible places. Some of them you cannot even see till you climb to the top of the cliff and look down. And then you can see the top of a ledge where there's a petroglyph carved into the top of the ledge. I mean, this was a major undertaking, and but we were way up, all the way to the top. Down on the trail, there's a guy coming along, and he's got a big black dog with him. And the trail was just sand, just like moon dust. It's like baby powder. It's just that fine.
Yeah.
And we could hear the dog's footsteps from up there.
Oh, wow, neat.
Yeah, we could hear the dog's footsteps.
Yeah. You know, some of those petroglyphs, I mean, it's just, there's a reason why it's there. You know, it's way up high, and that's, you know, in most cases, that's where the door is. That's where the spirit is. It's way high up on the mountain. You know, in order for someone to actually have seen something, you know, that crazy or that significant, is for someone to actually see it. So that Ho'okam Indian, he must have saw something, you know, and he climbed all the way up there. He made an effort because that's where the spot is. You know, well, some of these petroglyphs, they're carved so awesomely that in certain parts of the day, you'll walk right by one and you won't see it because the sun is hitting it just right that it turns invisible. You know, and then when the sun starts to dissipate or to go away or is in the right spot, then it comes out, you know, like awesome. You can see it totally. But when the sun is in the right spot, you can't see it. It's not there. There's been so many times I've gone over the same trails back and forth, and I'll find something new almost every time because the sun was in a different position.
Yeah. The reason we climbed to the top of that is because we're standing down at the bottom, and we could see way up there. We could just see the edge of some petroglyphs. But there was a ledge that blocked our view of the full petroglyphs. We climbed up there. And when we climbed up there, there's two spirals pointed upward.
That's right. That's the door. You found a door. Absolutely.
And then we went, I guess it was another, from where those spirals were, there was a ledge big enough for the two of us to stand. And from there to the top of the cliff was probably another 50 feet up. And we went on up, and we're standing up there when I could hear something, and I said, Walter, what's that? And we look, and it's that black dog. We can hear his footsteps in the sand.
Yeah, that's pretty neat.
Yeah. Yeah. Now, let me say this. Standing where we were standing, if we look over the cliff down to the ground, we see a trail with sand and the guy with his black dog, right? If you turn around and look the other direction, it goes down into a, like a natural fort.
Oh, really?
Yeah, it's like a cup at the top of the mountain. And it just kind of goes down into this natural enclosure, and it's just like a big cup up there.
Did you see any evidence of a fire? Was there soot on the walls, or any evidence that they were camping, any petroglyphs or anything?
Nothing. Petroglyphs all around the outside of it.
Oh, yeah.
And nothing on the inside.
Yeah, yeah, that's a special spot. Chances are that's where a shaman stayed. A shaman would stay there yearly, all the time, you know, praying to this thing, you know, worshiping this thing, and presenting their gifts, and keeping tabs on it, you know.
Mm-hmm. Okay, now, you know, you and I talked about this before. By the way, we have a flash message here from Belgium, from Spardella Giulio, and he says, just to say hello to Jeff, a great show, thank you, and best wishes from Pegasus.
Thank you. Thank you so much. It's great of you to say. I appreciate that.
the thing that you and I have talked about before, you know, you present these as being living entities, and I think you make a good case for that. You also present them as being what we would consider evil because they eat people, they capture people, they take them away. Now, you have been up there, sitting there for hours at a time, day after day after day, calling on these things to come out and talk to you. Aren't you afraid you're going to be eaten?
I think it's relatively safe. You know, like I said before, apparently they're just watchers. You know, they're watching on how things go, and I think we're relatively safe. As far as me finding them, acknowledging them, and everything else, I think that and actually seeing them, you know, and actually making a little bit of contact with them. It might have helped me in the long run, because I know, you know, when it hits the fan, everyone's going to be terrified not knowing what's going on, you know, but the few people that do, they'll understand what's going on, and I think they'll have probably a better survival plan, and, you know, it's possible that, you know, because I believe in the Lord. I mean, it's possible that the Lord, you know, won't let anything, you know, happen because, you know, I could be a messenger on things to come. So there's, you know.
Yeah, but look, the first time, the very.
They can come down into my house, pick me up right now, you know.
Yeah. Now look, the very first time, you know, it's not safe. It's too late. We have to take a break. We'll be back right after this.
Well, around for you, do anything you want me to. I'll even play the victim this time. There's nothing left to complicate or fail a card to illustrate the way she thinks about me at times. Well, I was looking for you, so that should be the warning that I may have messed it up this time. Still, she loves to tell me that she'll only be happy if I stay around to make things right. And it pains me to think that we'll
all right, welcome back to the Kevin Smith Show. We are on Final Approach. We only have a few minutes left in tonight's show, and the telephone lines are open if you wish to call. If you don't call. And we are talking with Jeff Woolline. Jeff is one of the few people outside of the Native American community that can read and understand these petroglyphs. He's quite an expert on them. And he discovered the link between what's in the petroglyphs and what is seen in the skies over Phoenix, Arizona. Before I saw the petroglyphs, I had seen these things in the sky. And when I saw them in the petroglyphs, my jaw dropped because these are very, very ancient. Now, as we went away for break, Jeff, I said, the very first time that you know these things have gone bad will be too late. Are you there, Jeff? Well, it would appear that we have lost Jeff, although it's showing me that we have not. We'll see if we can get him back. And tell you what we'll do. We'll use him for just a moment. Interesting, wasn't it? We have Jeff back with us. Jeff, you know, I said as we went to break, the very first time you know these things have turned bad, it's going to be too late.
I can really hear you, Kevin. I apologize about that. I can't hear you.
The very first time you know that these things have gone bad, that they've turned mean, it's going to be too late.
Yeah, you know, that's something that, you know, I kind of fear for, you know, mankind, the people who, you know, haven't really understand the Bible and understand, you know, the world and whose eyes hasn't been opened up yet. I think they're really in for a shock when it comes down, especially when the people that, you know, don't believe in UFOs and things, I mean, their world's really going to get turned upside down, you know, when it hits the fan. And I just hope that that they believe in God and God will save them. But if I thought that these things were here to help mankind, yeah, that's what I thought at the beginning. You know, I thought a whole bunch of different ways. You know, I thought spaceships, you know, other planets, this and that. And then when I studied it and I watched it, my outlook on this went completely different. You know, I made a complete U-turn. I was like, hey, wait a minute. Now I understand why the government isn't saying anything. You know, if they were here to help us cure cancer and to help us cure AIDS, then the government would be all over it, you know, saying, hey, we're saved. You know, but they're not. They're keeping a hushed lid on this. They're just secretly watching these things. And when these things decide to make contact, that's when the president will go underground, and it won't be a good thing. And that's why a lot of people, well, how come they haven't made contact yet? You know, like I said, you know, we don't need them yet. You know, we have to look at the past. You know, during that past, the Holocom needed these things to survive. You know, we don't need them right now. And they fooled, you know, they fooled the Holocom, because these things were cast down onto the earth. You know, they're the ones that produced the giants. You know, they were the ones that, you know, rebelled against God. You know, and they're watchers. They're here to watch what's going on until that great quote-unquote rapture, you know, just like what the hell Holocom went through. You know, in my opinion, they went through a type of rapture. You know, and
yeah, but what if your interpretation of that is, what if your interpretation of that is not correct? What if they're not evil? What if they're, you know, what if they're not going to say, hey, we're gods?
Well, that'd be great. You know, then we're talking about, you know, God's kingdom. And it's interesting because when he lands out there on the Dome of the Rock, he's going to be in the shape of a cube. Okay, and we're seeing, you know, sometimes we see UFOs that look like cubes. All right, and this cube is going to land on the earth, and then that'll bring peace on, you know, on earth here. And so that'll be great. You know, maybe they're waiting for mankind to destroy themselves. You know, I believe that, you know, the reason why we're in this war with the other side of the world, you know, it's like a holy war. Okay, they tell you it's a holy war because one side believes in one prophet and the other side believes in another prophet. And the only bad thing about this is those people over there on that side of the world, they know that the world has to be two-thirds destroyed for their God to come back, because that's what the scriptures say. You know, when the world is destroyed, then the Lord will come back and, you know, and rescue people, you know. So they're wanting this to happen. They want to build these nuclear bombs. They want to destroy all this stuff because that's what's going to bring these creatures down. That's just my opinion.
Well, of course, I think that the exceedingly religious, whether they are exceedingly Islamic or exceedingly Christian or exceedingly Jewish or Buddhist or Hindu or whatever else, I think they have missed the teachings of their own prophets at that point.
Yeah.
But that's my opinion, and, you know, I don't think that any of the prophets taught that it was going to be a good thing to destroy the earth. But I know there are modern-day self-appointed prophets who say that's what these prophets taught. And,
yeah, that's right.
And, you know, but I don't, you know, what if... instead of the Hohokam being grabbed up and taken against their will into the sky, what if they were being rescued from some calamity?
That could have been. That's a good point. Something, you know, could have, these things could have saved the people, you know, these things. But, serpents and orbs and flying dragons and things. I mean, that's pretty scary if you ask me.
Well, it is in our culture, but in the Asian culture, and in fact in all ancient culture, the serpent was not scary. The serpent was a symbol of great wisdom.
Mm-hmm.
As a matter of fact, you've quoted the Bible here a couple of times, so let me quote it. Be as wise as serpents and as gentle as doves. That's in Proverbs.
There you go.
So,
yeah.
Even in the Bible, the serpent is seen as a symbol of wisdom. It's only in Western culture that the serpent has become the symbol of evil.
Yeah.
And it's been made into something scary for us. But look, I don't view a snake as being anything but evil. A snake, the only good snake is a dead snake. They scare me to death, man.
Yeah, I ran into quite a few of them up on the mountain. I almost got bit a few times. So
yeah,
they're not fun to run into at all.
Yeah, but you know, it says be as wise as serpents. and it's pretty easy to understand. You will never, ever sneak up on a snake. He always knows where you are. You may not know where he is, but he always knows where you are.
Oh, yeah.
And so I think, you know, it's quite possible that these things maybe do not have evil intentions. Hey, we're out of time. Hang on, and I'll talk to you for a moment after the show. Ladies and gentlemen, that's it. That's going to do it for this evening.